Now I don't have to justify my belief that as a kid I was the one who ate beef with grief. But I sighed and I tried not to think about...
Hello and welcome to All Things Vegan. You're listening to 88.9 KPOV High Desert Community Radio.
One day I heard about this awesome meat-free diet, and I'm singing to you today to get you to try it. Cause things will still be finger-licking if you don't eat chicken, and you find another dish that won't include fish. There are lots of things to eat that don't include.
This is Judy, and I'm here with Barb, and we have a great show for you today. We have an interview with Leah Putnam, a woman who stood grounded in her truth when faced with a diagnosis of invasive breast cancer. She healed herself completely without mainstream treatments of surgery, radiation, or chemotherapy. She founded Holy Cancer in hopes that people will find incredible wellness in spite of what they have been led to believe. She's been in the health and fitness world for over 30 years and is certified to teach many forms of fitness training. And in 2007, she became a certified Raw Culinary Arts Associate Chef and Instructor from the Living Light Culinary Arts Institute. She feels that her mission is to help others achieve optimal health and vitality. We also bring you news from the vegan frontier, where you'll hear about a new development that could make animal testing and experimenting obsolete. You'll hear which congressman just went vegan, an update on developments with Steve Hendy, who we interviewed on our last show, and much more news from the vegan frontier. Plus, we bring you news around town and more. So stay tuned for All Things Vegan.
And now it's time for some news from the vegan frontier. Well, Judy, here we are again. I wanted to circle back a little bit to some news that I talked about back in August, and that was two great legal victories for animals in Oregon. I don't know if you remembered me talking about that, but the Oregon Supreme Court had issued two important decisions kind of at the same time. One was the State versus Nix, affirming the Oregon Court of Appeals decision by holding that animals who are abused by their owners are victims of those crimes, at least for sentencing purposes. And then secondly, State versus Fessenden Dickey, ruling that the exigent circumstances exception to the warrant requirement can apply to animal cruelty victims in imminent harm. So I'm going to talk more about the latter case in a minute, but you'll also recall that a few months ago we aired an interview with Stephen Wise, who's founder of the Non-Human Rights Project. He's currently arguing cases for the legal personhood of chimpanzees in the state of New York. Stephen Wise commented through a guest opinion in the Oregonian recently about the latter of these two cases that I just mentioned, the State versus Fessenden, and I wanted to share it with you because it's just really exciting and really interesting. So he says, on August 7th in State versus Fessenden, the Oregon Supreme Court decided that the Oregon and U.S. constitutions allow a police officer to enter private property without a warrant, seize an emaciated horse who was near death from starvation, and take her to a veterinarian. But the court did not merely interpret two constitutions. It injected itself into the growing statewide, national, and international debate over the evolving legal status of non-human animals. It cited a 2013 Oregon statute as evidence of the ongoing evolution of the legal status of animals and observed that the day may come when humans perceive less separation between themselves and other living beings than the law now reflects. It ventured beyond Oregon to note that ongoing litigation in the United States seeks to establish legal personhood for chimpanzees and cited the three lawsuits recently filed by the Non-Human Rights Project in New York State on behalf of four chimpanzees that were featured last April on the cover of the Sunday New York Times magazine. Finally, it moved beyond the United States and noted that India's Central Zoo Authority recently banned the exhibition of dolphins after concluding that their status was closer to that of non-human persons. In short, the Supreme Court observed that it does not need a mirror to the past or a telescope to the future to recognize that the legal status of animals has changed and is changing still. There's a little more, but isn't that exciting so far?
It's so exciting.
This is Oregon.
Woo. Yeah.
As president of the Non-Human Rights Project, who teaches animal rights jurisprudence at Portland's Lewis and Clark Law School, it says, this is Stephen still speaking, I can attest that the Oregon Supreme Court accurately captured the rapidly growing stages of a state, national, and international legal movement to recognize the legal personhood of non-human animals. This is important because legal persons count before the civil law, while legal things are invisible. Entities without legal personhood are mere slaves to legal persons, helpless in the face of their power. So, when they went in to get that horse, they were saying that that horse was more than a thing, and that it was okay to make an exception and go save its life.
Right.
So, super cool. Just a little bit more. One engine propelling this legal movement in Oregon, the United States, and worldwide is that over the last half century, scientists have recognized that many non-human animals possess extraordinary complex cognitive abilities. In our New York lawsuits, 9 of the world's most eminent experts in chimpanzee cognition from Japan, Germany, Sweden, England, Scotland, and the United States filed extensive affidavits demonstrating that chimpanzees, like humans, remember their past and plan for their future and live autonomous lives, lives they want and care about. They engage in highly complex communication with humans and with each other and use simple mathematics. They pass on culture to later generations and can understand cause and effect and the experience of others. They can imagine, imitate, innovate, and use and make tools just like humans do. With this case, the Oregon Supreme Court signaled they recognize the changing legal status of non-human animals. And again, that was Stephen Wise. He's the president of the Non-Human Rights Project. And he teaches that animal rights jurisprudence class at Lewis and Clark Law School that I took this summer.
That is just so exciting and hopeful. I can't even find the words to say how hopeful it is.
Yeah, I think it's a very exciting time. You know, not only do we have things happening here in Oregon, but those cases with the chimpanzees in New York City are ongoing right now. I think in October, a couple of the appeals are going to be heard. We're going to, of course, have updates on that. And then, speaking of animal abuse, I just wanted to mention that the FBI is now tracking animal crimes data in their Uniform Crime Reporting Program, which is pretty cool. They didn't do that before. Now, it didn't really define animal crimes, because obviously it's not going to include abuses against factory-farmed animals and that sort of thing, but it is going to include the kind of crimes against domestic animals that are illegal at the moment. So I just thought I would read a little bit about that the ALDF had posted, and then we can talk about that a little bit. Because I have some mixed feelings. Since 1929, the FBI has been the central repository for the collection and dissemination of federal, state, and local crime statistics. Law enforcement and lawmakers alike regularly cite these statistics when making key policy decisions, be it a decision by a local sheriff to add patrols to reduce the rate of residential burglaries or a state legislature's enactment of a new statute defining a new crime or enhancing the penalties for an existing one. For those of us who champion animal protection issues, we have been frustrated by the fact that the FBI's UCR program has not included data related to crimes against animals. However, that glaring deficiency is about to change. The key internal committee within the FBI that proposes changes to the UCR program rules recently and unanimously passed 2 resolutions that amend the UCR program to expand its scope to finally include crimes against animals, and in September 2014, the director of the FBI formally approved these changes. So they're saying that's great news, and it's pretty cool, and hopefully it will be of some help. Now, I mean, there is some question about, who has access to that database. It might just be the FBI. They don't really have a great track record of handling things well.
I'm not sure.
And I saw some commentary on there, and it asked about, why did this take so long? We should have known forever that violence against animals as a child leads to other things against humans, and, why did it take so long for them to track this? Well, let me just say, having been involved in the forensic community some 20 years back, things are not as organized as they appear for the longest time. And I venture to say it probably is still like this. But for the longest time, I mean, most databases were kept individually per state. There was no communication across lines. And so that's why when we had like serial killers and that sort of thing, you could cross the state line and it was very, very hard to track them down and to even recognize that the same pattern of crimes were happening in different jurisdictions, sometimes even county-wise. And so, that same thing would have happened here with other types of information. And if they are truly tracking it now nationally, that will be a good thing. I don't trust that the huge bureaucracy of the FBI is going to do a very efficient job, but, maybe I will be pleasantly surprised.
Well, I have to say, I'm not too hopeful of that either.
And then, you know, I just had a couple quick things. I noticed that we have another congressman, a South Florida congressman that went vegan and has been in the news lately. His name is Ted Deutch, I would think you say. He's been a very out there vegan, and I guess he went plant-based right after he got into office, and he's been very vocal about it, and he says he lost 25 pounds. His health has definitely improved. He's not too worried about not getting contributions from the pork or beef people because he says part of his district includes the agricultural reserve in western Palm Beach County, and it's a major vegetable production area, and he's going to concentrate on that.
That makes several now. I don't know how many, but yeah, there's quite a few.
We have Dennis Kucinich, who's been a longtime vegan, and you know, and then the other famous politician, of course, would be Bill Clinton, who's a little on and off again, but still then, mostly vegan.
And then the mayor of Chicago, and
you're right, yeah.
A few others. There's one in Texas. I can't think of. I can't think of his name, but
yeah. And then one other really quick thing I noticed that. You know, I used to live on the East Coast for a few years, and there was this restaurant chain called Friendly's, and I don't think it was probably very friendly to vegetarians. I wasn't vegetarian at the time, but I remember it. Yeah. Anyway, now they have Gardein burgers, the vegan Gardein burgers, I guess, they're serving there. So I thought that was kind of a good thing. So even, I mean, that's a big chain. So it's nice that here of another chain that's adding vegan options.
That's good, yeah.
So how about you? What's up?
Well, I had a couple of updates on things we talked about previously as well. Well, I think recently we talked on a show about the brutal roundup of wild horses to make more room for cattle to graze and, that are being raised for meat. And right now there's a little under 48,000 wild horses and burros that have been rounded up and held in short-term facilities. And activists around the country are trying to bring awareness to the plight of these wild horses that roam on our public lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management. One such event was a screening of the film The American Mustang, held in Santa Barbara. One person who attended that screening was Mandy Jackson Beverly, who wrote in a Huffington Post article, quote, "Nothing prepared me for the cruelty of man toward beast that flooded the screen. These horses are rounded up by helicopters, locked into pens, processed by age and gender, and branded. From here, they are then shipped to various holding facilities. But what I found most heartbreaking was witnessing each animal's distress when separated from his or her deeply bonded families and social groups." And then there was another activity that was also trying to bring awareness to the same thing. Activists occupied the Bureau of Land Management's Wyoming office and temporarily blocked the entrance to a nearby holding pen where horses are held captive. Over a dozen law enforcement officials followed the activists throughout the day, but they did not intervene in an apparent effort to minimize media coverage, which would call additional attention to the government roundups. Police were on hand, however, in case the protesters attempted to liberate the horses from the holding pen. The protesters, many who drove up 6 hours from neighboring states to participate in this act of civil disobedience, wanted to speak with the representatives of BLM, but of course, they were refused. The activists used a megaphone to chant, "Stop the roundup, stop the pain. BLM is to blame." The protest made front page news in the local paper. Only 1,900 wild horses remain in Wyoming. During the current roundup period, BLM is capturing and removing 800 of them on behalf of powerful cattle ranchers who want the public lands to themselves for grazing. The BLM intends to continue the roundups.
Did you, when you were reading that first article, did you just, or, you know, you're summing it up, but did you just say something about some of the deaths that have occurred recently with horse? Because I had seen something where, you know, they do those roundups and often horses die because of either of stress or they get caught in the, you know, caught in the fencing or, you know, whatever. But I didn't know what state it was. Had you heard about that at all?
I have heard about that. Yeah, it's brutal. It's just brutal. I mean, you can imagine from just hearing those stories about how they're rounded up and branded and separated, and yeah, it's awful, and some of them do die, and then they're gonna, many of them are gonna die even after because they are available for adoption, but they don't all. I mean, 48,000 horses, they're not going to get adopted. Many of them are going to be killed. And all because people want to eat meat and graze cattle on the land that belong to the horses. And then I had another update on Steve Hendy, who we interviewed on our last show, and I thought I'd let you know what he's up to now. He's never idle when animals are being harmed. Steve Hendy is founder of Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, or SHARK. And recently, he received an anonymous letter informing him that the United States Senator Jim Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, was to have a live pigeon shoot as part of his fundraising event at the Quartz Mountain Lodge in Lone Wolf, Oklahoma. The writer said that they themselves were a Republican and a longtime supporter of the senator, but they went on to say that the live pigeon shoot event is an embarrassment to hunters and to all supporters of Senator Inhofe. As SHARK is the nationwide leader in the animal protection movement fighting against live pigeon shoots, they decided to send in an undercover investigator to the event to both witness and film the pigeon shoot. And there is a video on SHARK's website. It's sharkonline.org. People can see the video if they want to. And SHARK is sponsoring a new statewide television commercial narrated by animal activist Bob Barker and graphically showing gross animal cruelty at Pennsylvania pigeon shoots.
Oh, good for him.
I know. It's expected to air on CNN, Fox News, and other networks.
Well, good, because, you know, it's just that people, we need visibility for it. And if the animal rights groups aren't going to help in that state, which clearly they aren't, which because we talked about that last time, you know, let the public know about it. Even the public, it doesn't matter your political party, you know, I mean, you're going to be upset about something that egregiously wrong if you see it, if you see and you know it's happening, right? Like the guy that wrote the letter. So
yeah.
I think that, wow, that's cool. That I wish maybe the commercial will be online so we can take a look at it.
I hope so. That would be great. And then I just wanted to talk about one more thing because I don't want to take up too much time. We've got a great interview ahead. But microchips could replace animal testing around the world. Microscopic artificial organs may soon eliminate the need for animal testing. Uwe Marks led a keynote speech and presented his company's newest human-on-a-chip prototypes at a recent conference entitled World Congress on Alternatives and Animal Use in the Life Sciences. His company, TISUSE, develops microchips made of circulatory networks, living human cells, and tiny pumps that simulate the architecture and activity of human organs. The technology can be used to test medical treatments and substances without using animals. The new process could spare the suffering and deaths of millions of animals. A 2008 study estimated that 115 million animals are used in laboratory experiments every year. 115 million, not just that number boggles my mind, but that's not even all of it. Many animals used in experiments are not even recorded. For instance, the United States does not collect data about birds and laboratory-bred mice and rats, which, despite making up over 90% of all laboratory animals, aren't even defined and protected as animals under the country's Animal Welfare Act. Marx's company offers a solution to scientists who now have the opportunity to perform tests on actual living, interconnected human organs and simulate how a living human would react. This is good news for humans as well as animals, since many drugs and procedures thought to be beneficial for humans because of how they tested on animals turned out to be disastrous for people. According to the Sunday Times, almost half of all modern drugs that succeed in animal tests cause unexpected side effects when brought into human clinical trials. So that was exciting.
Yeah, I love it when, you know, new stuff's been developed all the time, and I hadn't heard about that yet.
I know. If that could replace animal testing completely. I mean, there's no need to test on animals anyway. We know that.
Yeah.
But if
I think we'll get there. We'll get there.
But I hope so.
Thanks, Judy. And if you have any questions about any of the news that we had today, just go to allthingsveganradio.org, take a look, or find us on Facebook, All Things Vegan. That'd be an easy way to get a hold of us. Say hi, give us your comments, and we'll see you there.
Hello, people. Sexy Vegan here. Grab your kale juice and a bowl of granola because you are listening to All Things Vegan. KPOV 88.9 High Desert Community Radio. That's crunchy.
Give him the time. You can do anything. Just make up your mind and give it a try.
A Little Pain by vegan artist Paul Seymour.
We have a couple special guests in the studio today. We have Leah Putnam. She's a raw vegan culinary expert, and she was here giving a food demo to the Cascade Culinary Institute students today, and we were able to sit in on that a little bit. She's a founder of Holy Cancer Community. It's at holycancer.com, and she focuses on wellness, not illness. Then we also have Addie O'Neill with us. She's with a company called Choose Growth, and they are actually responsible for bringing Leah to town. So I thought we would talk with both of them, and first maybe start with Addie. You can tell us a little bit about Choose Growth and tell us what you're doing and what you're doing with Leah.
Hi, yeah. Thank you for having us today. This has been a really fun experience. We just had a great time at the Culinary Institute. So I'm with the company Choose Growth. We're here locally in town. We also have some members of our company up in Portland as well. So we have two kind of branches. But our specialty is working with thought leaders from all over the nation. We have people in every area of thought leader. And it's just really, really cool to get to work with people like Leah. Leah is an expert, like you said, in raw food and vegan food and living food. And it's been really great. We're creating e-courses with our partners. So we can do rebranding. We do new websites for them. But the main thing we do is getting those leaders' expertise into e-courses. So that's what Leah's doing here with us today. And we filmed her at the Culinary Institute, and it was just really fantastic. So thank you for having us.
So Leah, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you came to be an expert in raw vegan living foods?
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. How did I become an expert? That's a good question. I don't really consider myself an expert, but just on a journey of this fantastic vital food. And I actually came upon it when I was starting to be in my late 40s and I started to have, being in the fitness business, I started showing up with aches and pains and getting out of my car and hurting, terrible sinuses. I was starting to show up getting sick more often, and it was just not the way that I wanted to see my life going. So then a friend of mine said, try this juice fast. So 5 days I went on a juice fast. I could not believe the amazing results that I got from doing that. And so then from there, I started, you know, just bumping into people who were living this raw food lifestyle. And that was an amazing journey. And I started to be more interested, curious. I had Elena Love, who is very well known in the raw food community, come into my own kitchen and give demonstrations. So I was like, oh my goodness. So there I moved up and into the world, into taking at Living Light in Fort Bragg, California, and taking courses with Sherry Sorcy to become a raw food chef. And from there, I was dabbling in and out of it. And that's kind of basically how I've been doing it. So then when I was given a diagnosis of cancer, I got really serious about the work. I watched both my parents die of cancer. I knew that cancer was not the disease, but that it was something that I was doing in my lifestyle that needed to change. That was a little tap on the shoulder. If you want to go down the right road, this is the way you need to go. So that's the reason I just went full on raw food vegan. I actually wouldn't say I'm a complete 100% raw food vegan, but a good portion of my diet is that way, and juices, sprouts that way. And then I do cook food too, but it's vegan.
So the first question I wanted to ask you, Leah, is you said that you did a 5-day juice cleanse and you couldn't believe how you felt. You're saying from just 5 days, you had amazing results. Could you say what some of those results were?
Right. Yes, I had crazy allergies. I mean, just consistent. I did shots for a while. That I was starting to react to those shots. That wasn't working for me. I didn't know what to do. You know, I was taking the drugs, the whole thing. When I went on this juice cleanse, everything cleared up. Amazing. I mean, it was that quick. I got results pronto. So that's how I really knew that something was up. And the aches and joints, I mean, I used to get out of the car and have to stand there for a second. That was weird till the aches would go. So like, I couldn't even move. Like, I'd have to stand there. Okay, now I can move. Those cleared up. I got feedback right away. I knew there was something up.
And then after those 5 days, you slowly add back in other foods and then see how your body feels to each food that you add in?
Or? No, I wasn't that scientific. No, I'm sure I went back to like, let me have it. You know, no, but I was aware. And that got my curiosity. So at that time we had the internet, so I was on the internet, you know, and I was researching, finding out as much as I could.
And then when you found out you had breast cancer, you did this to a greater extent. And you did it without any surgery, radiation, or chemotherapy, right?
That's correct. And let me back up just a little bit. So I went in and I became a raw food chef. I was giving classes at my home. People were not biting. I was not getting the audience participation or the interest that I thought that, you know, come on, everybody, look at this. This is amazing. So in my own lifestyle, I was starting to feel, you know, you're kind of out there swimming upstream. So socially, when I became a vegetarian 25 plus years ago, people stopped inviting me and my husband to dinner. I mean, they just did not know back then, 25 years, how would you possibly eat. So this was going raw vegan. I mean, I was an outcast. So little by little, I started picking up back into more cooked foods and things like that, more gluten, things like that. But when I became given the diagnosis of cancer, I was, you know, I believe completely that cancer was not a disease and that I was empowered that I could do something about it that did not include radiation, chemotherapy, and surgery. But when it happened to me, I was on the other side of the fence. I had to go, wait a minute. You know, everybody's going, hey, try this, try that. And I was just like, just leave me alone for a second. I kind of need to figure this out. What my beliefs were really challenged at that point. Did I really trust that cancer was not a disease and that through my lifestyle I could change that? So I had to really do a lot of soul searching. I mean, at one point I went to all the doctors. I got all the information. And at one point I was going to do the surgery just so people would leave me alone. Because people were scared. Like, well, I wasn't moving fast enough for people. And if you get a cancer diagnosis, you got to go here, you got to go there, you got to go do this. I mean, I'm surprised how anybody who's sick, because I didn't feel sick, even navigates through that world. And there is not even stop here, stop there, think about it. It's boom, 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 boom. So I had to say, every time I went into a doctor's office and I had a conversation and we did things, I would be like, the hair would go up on my back and going, this is not my truth. This is not my truth. This is not my truth. And my husband was behind me. And if he wasn't there, I don't know if I would have had that in myself to be able to trust my inner being. And so I all of a sudden, like, you know, after 6 weeks reeling, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I figured it out. I was like, okay, I need to get really healthy. And I was going to go down and do just a fast. But then I go, Leah, what did you say? You've been saying this for, you know, 5, 10 years. If something ever happened to you, you're going to go to the Hippocrates Health Institute. So that's what I did. I called them right away. I need to get in there right now. And off I went. And I believe that breast cancer has got a lot of component about nurturing yourself. And I know as women, we nurture everybody, our children, our husbands, our community, but we don't nurture ourselves. And I believe that that was a huge piece. And I was only going to go for 2 weeks. It's a 3-week program. And I thought, well, I already know this stuff. So, you know, 2 weeks is good. And because I have to be with this group of women in this community circle, and I'm dedicated to them. We're all got our tickets and our reservations, and we're all supposed to meet at this certain place. And so I'll only go for 2 weeks because, you know, I owe it to them. I mean, this is only my life, but I owe it to them. So off I go, and within the first week I go, I called them and I said, I need to stay here. This is what's going on with me, and I need to stay here. And they're like 100% behind me. Everybody switched the agenda. And after 3 weeks of being there, it was an amazing experience. But guess what? Everybody was doing it for me. Like, my wheatgrass was made for me. My, you know, be here, be there. You have to think about nothing. And all your food just goes through the buffet line. So it was pretty darn cushy. I mean, I was loving it, right? This is the kind of food I love. When I got home, that was another story. What am I going to do now? And I woke up absolutely paralyzed the next morning, crying. And I said to my husband, how am I going to do this? I mean, I've had this done for me. How am I going to do this? And he said, we'll do this one day at a time. And that just, oh my gosh, one day at a time. And that's what we've done, one day at a time. And so I've kept that lifestyle, one day at a time.
So the Hippocrates Institute, did you go to the one in Florida and the one run by Dr. Brian Clement?
Yes, and his wife.
Awesome, yeah. Awesome.
We've had Brian Clement on the show before and talked with him, and we're big fans.
Yeah.
And that's a totally raw program, right?
It is, completely raw. You know, and he does a lot of sprouts, the wheatgrass. You know, it's all based on Ann Wigmore's work, who cured herself of stage 4 colon cancer. So pretty amazing group of people and facility, and yeah, I loved it. It was a great experience.
So you slowly learned one day at a time how to nurture yourself and make those foods for yourself, even though you already had a lot of experience, but just tailoring that to what you needed. Then what happened next? How long did it take for you to feel comfortable with that new routine?
That's a good question. So what happened next is, like, day by day, we started growing the sprouts. We started, you know, little by little, we've got racks. So if you see my house, it's got racks of sprouts and wheatgrasses. We juice wheatgrass every day, and the food is so vibrant. I love, love, love my routines in the kitchen. Before it'd be like, I gotta go, where's my bagel, peanut butter, good, yeah, gone. Now it's like I get up, I do my meditation, you know, and I wander around the kitchen making almond milk and this and that and the next thing, and it's always something preparing. That didn't happen overnight, right? It was, you know, I ate a lot of salads. It was just salads for a long time because I had to get fuel. So that's how I did it. So little by little we did that. I didn't want to just go through this and not, you know, I wanted confirmation. So I found myself an oncologist. I was going all over. Oh, go here, go there. You heard of this one. And I went, wait a minute, I have Stanford, you know, hospital, university right in my backyard. I should be just going there. And it was very challenging to get somebody to work with me. I want an oncologist, somebody who can monitor me so I know that if I'm making improvement, right? Mm-hmm. So at first I had somebody, you know, and I was going to get the appointment the day before. They go, we don't have all your labs. They call me. What do you mean you don't have all my labs? We don't have your surgery lab. I go, well, I didn't do surgery. And he says, well, the doctor won't see you until you do surgery. And I'm going, so the doctor won't see me unless I can't get an oncologist unless I have surgery. They go, yeah, that's kind of how it works. And I said, really? So you're telling me that there's no doctor that will help me and monitor me? She goes, wait a minute. Let me see if I can find somebody. She went back and she goes, I found a doctor who will work with you. And so I monitored myself with this doctor. And it was great because he would come as assistant and we would go through the whole bantering of array of drugs that I could take. And he had to. By law, he needs to do that if he ever goes up a few more review reports. And I'd go, no, and we'd discuss it. Well, I feel like I'm doing that, and I'm getting that from this and that and the next thing. And I no longer would do mammograms. We would monitor through ultrasound. So then I'd go to the big cancer clinic, and I'd get my ultrasound done, which I felt like I was a foreigner with a visa because I would go in there. And it was kind of like you've got your piano playing. I felt like I was at the Love Boat. You got your piano playing, the concierge, and I was like, whoa. This is really interesting because this looks like the Love Boat, but everybody is really, really, really sick. And I would get that done. And each time, the results would come back. The tumors continued to shrink. The doctor and I shook, and he said, will you agree that if things do not go the way you want them to go, will you change course? And I says, when we come up against that, if we come up against that, I will definitely consider changing course. So we kind of had that agreement going up front. Like I was saying, it was continuing to decrease. But the last time when it finally was completely gone, they couldn't find it. They couldn't detect it. I'm in the radiology getting the ultrasound. And the technician goes, well, you know, and I could tell she wasn't zeroing in on anything. So I kind of was like, and for me, it was like nice to go in there. It was dark and I could rest for the day. And she goes, well, you know, I'm probably going to call your doctor, but don't be alarmed. And maybe somebody from head of radiology is going to come down, but don't be alarmed. I'm not alarmed, you know, whatever. The head of radiology comes down, and he's starting to do the ultrasound, and he's going all, I mean, he's looking everywhere. It was kind of like, what you looking for? And he's looking everywhere, and pretty soon he goes, oh, I can't find it. And I looked at him, I said, wow, you sound disappointed. You know, it was just so far out of the box, like he couldn't, and he goes, oh, no. And it wasn't like, so what are you doing? Oh, well, from diet, lifestyle changes. That was it. Conversation ended right there. Nothing wanted to know. What is it that you're doing? You know, it was very interesting to me. Like, I would be going, so what are you doing? You know, let me know. But that's not the way the stream is going there.
Well, it sounds like you finally found a doctor you could work with really well. But before that, did you face a lot of opposition? And did it scare you, the things they said? And did they kind of push you into having the traditional treatment?
Yes, I had. You have to do this right away. You have fast-growing ductal carcinoma. This you need to get it right now. This is aggressive, everything like that. And when I left, you know, I mean, what are they going to do? They're not going to really, so they're not chasing me down. They would kind of like, you know, what are you doing? And every once in a while, somebody would follow up. But I kept this pretty close to my chest. In fact, I have, you know, full array of clients, and they didn't even know. There was a handful of people that I let know that what I was going through. And the reason is because I was having to deal with this myself. Is this your truth? And stay on that path and trust myself. And I couldn't deal with other people's fears. And people did fear. Like some people I told that were close friends, they completely, like, didn't know what to do, and it was hands-off. And it was very hurtful. So my clients didn't know. People didn't know what I was doing. My husband knew. My family knew.
And now it's been 3 years at least, and
yes.
You're doing great?
Actually, it's been 3 years now. 3 years now since I was given the diagnosis. Yeah, I'm doing great.
So inspirational. I really appreciate you sharing your story. I wanted to ask you about, you said you've been vegetarian for about 25 years. What prompted that initially?
That was prompted by Tony Robbins. I was out at a Tony Robbins event, and he had John Robbins. I did it purely for, you are kidding me, they're doing that to those animals? I could not stomach it. And that was the reason I gave up eating meat, was completely. And I dabbled in fish, but then I gave that completely up. And I just finished going on a wonderful rafting trip with John Robbins down the Klamath River.
Oh, I had seen that advertised.
Yeah.
That was like so much fun. Oh my gosh.
That was a blast. And it was all vegan. So cool. And his son, Ocean, is amazing. And his wife.
Yeah, we've talked with Ocean before, too. He's fantastic. How many days was your trip?
5.
And then so you would camp at night?
Yes.
And then the food was provided?
Yes.
I wanted to ask you if you have, in the last 3 years, if you've coached other people who are facing cancer, and if so, if you have any stories to tell about that?
Yeah, people do contact me. I just feel people should know. And I think I mentioned in the class, it's like, it's a vibration, it's a frequency. People that are on that same frequency will seek you out. And that's my quest. If it isn't your choice to do it the way that I did it, it isn't your choice. And you need to be 100% behind whatever choice it is. I coach a few. In fact, I was just texting as we were on our way over. A friend of mine whose husband now is going through cancer, and they're not giving him very long to live, and helping her out. They're telling her, it's over. I never think it's over. You know, if you've got a will, there's a way. And so there's a journey within even that way.
Tell us a little bit about your Holy Cancer community online.
Yeah, so I started like, how about Holy Cancer? And Holy Cancer is about the holistic piece of it. And I put the cancer in there. So it's about the whole body, the whole person, cancer, even as a wholeness in the community. To me, cancer is not a disease, and we all have cancer. And I don't even mean just physically, but we all are up against some type of cancer in our bodies. Not just our bodies, but even our minds. Something that is trying to take us out, right? So it's kind of drawing in and bringing that kind of community together. And I started with the cleanses. I actually started with a wellness class. When I was flying out to Hippocrates, even though I believed cancer was not a disease, my sister-in-law, who had battled through breast cancer, and I believe she battled, and she did fantastic, and she gave me Chris Carr's book. I laughed my whole way on the plane. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, 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 you know, and I'm so inspired by her, because just her way of looking at life and dead girl walking, I was on the floor. You know, just the whole thing of what she was up against and what she's done. I just admire her so, so much. So getting out to that community just kind of started with this reading a crazy sexy diet. So I started with crazy sexy, and I got it like kind of a group that was like a book club, and we all, you know, went through the whole book together, and I kind of lectured on it. Then it was like the end of it. Okay, well, let's do the 21-day cleanse. And so they continued on, and more joined in, and it became this 21-day cleanse. And then I do it like 2 to 3 times a year. It's really popular around New Year's. That was great because I'm doing it on the phone and we're doing it that way. And I'm very involved and it's teleconferencing and, you know, I have letters and the whole thing. It's a complete program that I've now turned over, starting from 21, you know, Crazy Sexy, but now making it my own. And I involve a lot of the science behind it, taking the raw food science courses I have in certificates, and now taking T. Colin Campbell's plant-based certificate in that. So I'm adding all of those pieces in. There's the whole, and then it's just not the food. It's, you know, or how you eat. It's how you think, and, you know, your spirituality piece and the emotions and all of those components coming together in the 21-day cleanse, which now I really feel like it's mine. And then I was introduced to Choose Growth, and it was just what the next step. I don't want to just wait till it's, okay, it's March such and such, and Leah's doing another one. Let's do it whenever we can. And then building that community throughout that way.
So the goal is to create maybe some online courses that are available all the time that would coach people through the 21-day cleanse, but they could start at any time
of
the year.
That's correct. Yeah, and I think Choose Growth is doing a fantastic job, and even have that support. And I think we're talking about having telephone, you know, people can call up at certain times and ask questions, and because that's where it's going, right? So many people are coming online every single day. Like, that is the next step.
So where will people be able to find those courses or whatever online content that you guys end up developing?
So right now it's under holycancer.com. where it's going to be going underneath is livingholy, W-H-O-L-Y.com. Right now that site has not been built out and the course isn't complete yet, but it's soon to be. It shouldn't be too much longer that we'll have it. But that will be still the kind of the old style and then the new style. I don't think, I know it'll be up and running for the first of the year because we have to. That's when everybody's ready to, yes. And another thing that's really interesting, like I get people that have had cancer, but I get more people who want to feel better. They're coming into their late 40s, 50s, and 60s that are like going, you know, I just don't feel the same. And the results they're getting are phenomenal. They're like blown away, and they change. They make this their way of life.
I was just wondering, as you were talking, did your husband also embrace this way of life?
So my husband is he's vegetarian. My kids were raised vegetarian. I have two twin boys. They're now 20. My husband's pretty good. I mean, he went on the 21-day cleanse, completely embraced it with that, lost weight. I mean, he's not a heavy guy in the first place, but he looks fantastic. We have a infrared sauna now, and he's out in that sauna every night. And we have a full house filtered water because we're in Northern California, so kind of need that. Yeah, so he's embraced it. I mean, he's behind me 100% and really, he does embrace it. I wouldn't say that he's raw vegan because he's not. My son just did a wonderful speech on cancer is not a disease. It touched my heart so much to hear it, like, from the mouth of babes. They're getting it, right? Okay, this is the future. Let's question it. Let's not just be sheep going along. Are we adding to our wellness or are we taking ourselves into the illness? And what's our focus? Is our focus our wellness or is our focus the illness?
We've been talking with Leah Putnam. She's a raw living foods expert, and she's been sharing a little bit about her journey with cancer and with learning to live holy and sharing that information with other people. And we're just really glad that she came in today and that we had a chance to see her cooking demo. And Addie O'Neill from Choose Growth brought Leah to town. So we're so very excited. So thank you so much, both of you, for coming in to talk with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was great.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Owen from Mug Revolution. I'm in my studio right now making mugs and listening to All Things Vegan on 88.9 KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
We have Jay Wells in the studio today.
We have Jay Wells in the studio today. He has a new show that's going to be coming up on KPOV in the next few weeks, and so we've invited him in so you could meet him. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hello, and hello, everyone in listener land. How you doing?
Good. Let's hear a little bit about your show. Tell our listeners what it's going to be and
whatever you want to tell them.
All right. My upcoming show is called Vinyl Vortex. It's a live mix show, which means that I'll be bringing my DJ turntables and mixer into the studio and mixing live right here, so you all get to hear all the mistakes, all of the creative happy accidents, all that fun stuff.
That's kind of scary.
Well, I don't like to make it easy on myself.
Oh, well, I heard a little bit of your show, and it was really good. I'm looking forward to
Thank you.
Being on here. And so how long do you think it'll be before we get it on the air?
Well, it's kind of out of my hands. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks here.
Oh, good. Good.
So you went through the traditional path of anybody who wants to be a volunteer DJ at KPOV. You took the DJ class up at the college and all that. And what else did you have to do?
Well, you know, there's the process of submitting a demo, no more than 10 minutes to the station, and of course you have to be aware of what the station wants from you, you know, things like legal IDs, you know, saying this is KPOV Bend, and things like that, so, yeah, 10 minutes, well, about a minute of that, and about 9 minutes of, pure vinyl mixing, actually.
And you even jumped in, I think, and did co-host a Pledge Drive show, didn't you?
Yeah. I co-hosted the Youth Radio Hour during our last Pledge Drive with a wonderful young man by the name of Jacob, who was 13 years old. Personally, I think it's a great thing to be able to bring younger people into the radio station so it's not kind of a closed world to them. And, yeah, it was a very fun experience.
Have you ever done a show like this before, like Vinyl Vortex?
I've done quite a few live DJ performances, I guess you could call them, and I was also a live performer in my own right, composing and producing electronic music for many years, so performing is not... is nothing new to me, but the broadcasting radio aspect of it is definitely new.
Well, we have a sample today. Should we play it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's see.
Here.
So that's a little taste of what I hope to bring to the airwaves.
With Vinyl Vortex, right? Okay.
That's right.
Well, cool. Thanks for coming in and telling our listeners about your new show coming up. We're really excited and can't wait for it to start.
You know, thanks for having me. And if anyone else out there in listener land is interested in following my footsteps, doing the same thing, it's not so hard. Come on down. They're really friendly people down here.
So true. All right, Judy, I think we just had a couple things to wrap up before we're done. We want to do a little bit of news around town.
Yes. This just came hot off the press. Ben Spay and Neuter Project is asking people to come to join them for Kendall Toyota of Ben's Kendall Cares kickoff. And that is on Tuesday, September 30th. So it is a week from today at 4:30 to 7. And if you go there, you could help them win $5,000 because I guess the group that has the most supporters showing up is going to win $5,000.
Neat.
That's what it sounds like. Cool. And they're going to donate all together. They're going to donate $20,000 to local charities.
Awesome.
Charities. So that would be a great way to help Ben Spay and Neuter. And for more information, you can go to bensnip.org.
Okay, and then also I just wanted to put in a quick plug for Portland Veg Fest, which is coming up this weekend at the Oregon Convention Center, September 27th and 28th. That is an annual event that Judy and I always attend, unless we have some other conference we need to go to. And I'm so looking forward to it, and it's not too late for you to do a road trip. It's a good weekend. The weather's still great. Drive up to Portland. It's so fun. There's hundreds of free food samples. I mean, you never have to buy a meal. You can just eat the samples. It's awesome. And then there's just tons of cool speakers, film screenings, cooking demos. Very fun time. So
it is. And there's so much, it's hard to decide what to do. There's lectures going on simultaneously. Oh, and there's going to be films. There's going to be films showing the whole time this time for the whole 2 days, films continuously.
Yeah, I just love it. The only thing is it's always hard to choose which things to go to. But anyway, that's this weekend, and thanks for listening, and we're going to let you go. See you next time. The theme song and musical clips you heard on our show today are courtesy of Paul Seymour. To learn more about Paul and his music, please visit paulseymour.com.au. Thanks for joining us today on All Things Vegan. We'd love to hear from you. Please leave us a message on Facebook at All Things Vegan or email us at info@allthingsveganradio.org. And for show notes and more, please see allthingsveganradio.org.
fine if you don't eat chicken and you find another dish that won't include fish. There are lots of things to eat that don't include meat. Don't eat like a barbarian, become a vegetarian. You can eat a tasty meal that doesn't use veal, and the food on your fork doesn't need to be pork, cause a true carnivore would eat meat raw. Don't eat like a barbarian, become a vegetarian. Don't eat like a barbarian.